Okay, Hebra, welcome back to TNT. Parshas Ki Tisa, a great parsha. You're in for a treat. Simon Morgenstern's Bar Mitzvah Parsha. Baruch Hashem, he's turning 21 and then he's going to get married. So that's what's happening, right? That's the way you draw it up. I was only 20 when I got married. So, whatever. Anyways, don't ask. Don't ask, thank you. Don't ask who bought Kiddush wine for us for the first 2 months. Whatever. I don't want to get in trouble. So we're on Parshas Ki Tisa. Parshas Ki Tisa is about the story of the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. Obviously, a lot to unpack in this story, and we're gonna pick up right in the middle, and it where there's a very strange set of psukim that the Torah just sort of like seems to pull out of nowhere. It doesn't seem to really fit. Here it is. So it says, you're like literally right in the middle of the story. Hashem tells Moshe, as Moshe's on the mountain, right, 40 days, 40 nights, the people are waiting for Moshe to come. He doesn't come. They miscount, they miscalculate, and they start freaking out. And we know they worship, they get Aaron involved, and they make a calf. Aaron is doing a delaying tactic, but it's not really a good thing that happens, obviously, because the Jewish people are worshiping an idol, right after, essentially, right, 40 days after they received the Torah, and God was, had told them, no idols, right? In the Aseret HaDibros. So God tells Moshe what happened while he's still on the mountain. And Moshe right there davens for the people and says, Hashem, don't do it. Look at what everyone's going to say. They're going to say that you took them out of Egypt just to kill them in the desert. Remember Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, right? You swore you'll have them. And Hashem relents. And Hashem, there's like sort of a stay of execution at that moment. So Moshe's still up on the mountain. This is the reading, by the way, that we call Vayichal Moshe, right? We read it on every fast day. This is in the middle of Parshas Ki Tisa. So right here, Vayichal Moshe, right? And he starts to daven and so on and so forth. And he succeeds. So he goes down the mountain. It says, Vayifen Vayered Moshe min ahar. So Moshe turns around. He goes down the mountain, right? He's up on the mountain for 4 days, 40 nights. And what does he have? It's coming down. He's coming down with the two tablets. Or if you remember a history of the world, was it part one or part one, probably, right? He comes down the, is it part two? And he comes down. There we go. Right. So he comes down the mountain, right? And he's like, behold. And it was three tablets. You're three. And then he drops one. He says, I mean, you're two tablets, right? So no, they were really two all along. Okay. Woody Allen notwithstanding, not Woody Allen, Mel Brooks notwithstanding, Mel Brooks notwithstanding, and he comes down with the lucho, and then it says, so ushnei luchot aidu piyado, luchot ktuvim mishnei Abraham, they're luchot, they are tablets that are written on both sides, inscribed on both of their surfaces, right, inside and out, mizeh ktuvim. And they were inscribed on the one side and on the other. Okay, like interesting fact. Very nice. Fun fact. V'aluchot ma'aseh Elohim heima. And the luchot, these tablets, were the works of God. V'amichtav michtav Elohim. And the writing was the writing God, meaning this was a literally a, like a heavenly slab of marble or concrete, whatever it was, some sort of stone, sapphire, they say, whatever it was. It's this heavenly something, this heavenly material, and Hashem's signature, Hashem's writing on it also was heavenly, right? Ma'aseh Elohim, Michtav Elohim, right? Both the substance and the writing. Charut ala luchot, incised upon the tablets. They were engraved into the tablets. Now, what's weird about this? So watch this. And then it says, he comes out, Vayishma Yoshua et kol ha'am b'reyon, then Yoshua hears what's going on, and he goes and he tells Moshe there's a war in the camp, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Like he fills him in. This seems very parenthetical. Says the Kli Yakar, even more. Listen to what the Kliyakar says. Kliyakar says, V'aluchan ma'as Elohim heima, kol pasuk zeh ein kan mekomo. It's the wrong place. This does not belong here. Ki'im lemala ba'pasuk v'yitein el Moshe kechaloto v'gomer, luchot even ktubim be'etzba Elohim. V'shama yola lahazkir mahut haluchot. Over there, earlier on, when it says that God gave Moshe the luchos, it says what the luchos were. They were luchos Evan, they were a stone, and they were written with God. That's where you would like sort of finish the statement and say there were Mas Elohim, the Mechtav. You're basically repeating something. It just doesn't belong here. V'nir Eli, v'shama yelo lahazkir mahut haluchot. That's where it should have just continued and said the rest of it. You know, harut, they were engraved on both sides. That's where it talks about it. And yet it brings it up randomly in the middle as Moshe is walking down with the luchos. Very odd. So he says as follows, V'shamay lo l'haskim ha'od ha'luchot, v'nir ali, lomar, and it seems to me to say, shekol pasuk zeh hu lehodia shahayu ha'osios charus al ha'luchos. The whole point of this pasuk was to show that, or to make it known that the letters were charut al haluchot. They were, as we said, incised or engraved upon the luchos. Kiratza bezeh litain tam lama shavar Moshe haluchos. What it's doing is the Torah is giving us a, as we call it, nesinas tam, giving us a reason, but before it even happens, it's really making a justification. It's rationalizing. It's making it a little bit easier to understand why Moshe would break the luchos right after he walks down. And obviously, we know why he broke them. It was to make a fuss. It was to show them this is serious, show them they don't deserve these luchos. I mean, again, all of that is true. In the very end of the Torah, God said, we know that there's a pasuk that says, not at the end, this isn't Kitisa, but even later at the end of the Torah, God basically says, look, I'm happy you did it. You know the phrase, Yashikoyach, right? Many people call it Shkoyach. Shkoyach, right? It's not really Shkoyach, by the way. I'm sure everyone knows this. It's Yiyasher, and it's not even Yashikoyach. It's Yiyasher Kochacha. Yiyasher Kochacha. May your strength be continue to be straight, right? Like, wow, way to go. Right? It's kind of like Kol HaKavod, way to go, bro. You know, or to a plural would be Yiyasher, Yiyasher, Kochachem. To a woman, it would be Yiyasher Kochech, Kochachich. Right? We turned it in Yashikoyach, right? And then we say Shkoyach. That's what my iPhone, you know how it, you know, recognizes words and stuff, right? Once you use them a lot. So my iPhone knows Shkoyach. If I start writing SHK, it gives me the, what's it called when it gives you the word? The what? Right. So, yeah, and so SHK, already Shkoyach. Okay. Simon and I developed a new word, right? Because it's even too hard to say Shkoyach. So we say Shkoy. That's it. Just a one syllable Shkoyach. Shkoy. Okay. But it comes from here, actually, where Hashem, at the little bit later in Parshas Kitisa, says, go, remember the luchot asher shibarta? The luchot that you, asher shibarta, that you broke, right? Where, so Rashi says there, yeyasher koichacha sheshibarta. I'm glad you did it. Well done. Okay? So we know that Moshe had reason to do it. But why? What's one of the reasons why? And how could it have been okay that he did it? So the Kliyakar is saying back in, Elolafisha haluchos hayu ma'as Elohim. It says because the luchos themselves, they were made of a heavenly substance. The michta Elohim who, and the signature, right? The writing was also a divine writing. Charut al haluchot. What does charut mean? Amr b'medrash charut cherus. Cherut min amalchios. Cherut means freedom, right? Like zman cherusenu. We're heading towards Pesach now after an amazing Purim. Chayus min amalchius, right? It's a freedom from the kingdoms of the world, freedom from subjugation, right? Because we have a Torah which gives us freedom. Others say chayus mimalchamavis. Others say no, it means freedom from the angel of death. Why? Because we engage in something that's generational, that's millennial, that not millennial like woke, I mean millennial, that defies time and place, right? That's eternal. So chayrus min amalach hamavis. Rabbanan amri chayrus min yisurim. Rabbanan say that it's freedom from suffering. Because we have perspective. Because we understand, right? This is the bigger, deeper reason for things. And there's perspective and context. We learn that from the Torah. V'landu kol zem idchsiv charut ala luchot. They learned all of this from the fact that it says charut ala luchot, that it was engraved on the luchos. V'lo nemar chakuk. Really engraved, if it really means engraved, that would be chakuk. Chakuk, lachkok, that would be to engrave. O katuv, or written on the luchot. Doesn't say that. This is charut. It's a weird word. Ela hayam mamashut beotan otiot. There was real substance in those letters. Keder sheperashin parshis Yisrael pasuk, v'chola amro imetakolo. It's like we, yeah? Yes, exactly. But they were, as much as there was a, you know, we could understand, we could look at something and say, okay, yeah, oh, this is the matter, this is what it is, you know, matter, space, whatever. And this is defied that. But in the spiritual world, it had spiritual substance, right? Please. Sure. Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They were heavenly. Correct. Exactly. Exactly. That's what they correct. Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what he uses to prove that. And the Gemara says that the mem, specifically, you're talking about a mem, sofit, and a samech, right? If you make bubble letters, right? The middle of that letter has to be floating on something, but they were just floating, right? There's no string. It was just floating. Beautiful. Beautiful. So based off this, thank you, Jeff. So based off this, it says, V'chola amroim et hakolo. It says that everyone saw at Matan Torah, at the Sinai experience, everyone saw the thunder. How do you see thunder? Right? So what does that mean? It means that there was something, some spiritual reality, right, that was thunder, that they were able to literally see, not just hear. Shekol dibor sheyatza mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for every word that came out of the mouth of God, whatever that means, God doesn't have a mouth, nitgashem, v'hayabo mamashut, it became physical, had some physical form, right? Again, that defied physics, v'hayabo mamashut, and had substance. Ad sheyachlu liroto, until they could actually see it. They could see the sounds. They could see the thunder. They could see God's voice. What? They could see the words. They formed an image. V'nechrutu otan dibrot ala luchot. And those dibrot, the dibrot that God said, right? The ten, what are dibrot, what are aser dibrot? We call them 10 commandments. It doesn't really mean 10 commandments. Chani, what does it mean? Aser hadibrot. You're muted. You're muted. Unmute. Yeah. They're the 10 utterances. The 10 utterances. The 10, you know, sayings. The 10 speeches. What matters of speech. Whatever they were. They weren't 10 commandments, right? So those words took on some sort of form, and they actually attached themselves literally from God's mouth onto the luchos. Isn't that cool, right? So God spoke, these words kind of woo, floated, whatever, and then all of a sudden they're floating in the luchos. Unbelievable. Baluchot lo ne'amar, he says, baluchot lo ne'amar, ela al haluchot. It doesn't say charut baluchot. They were engraved in the luchot. That's what it should say. It says charud ala luchot. It says they were engraved on the luchos. How could they be engraved on the luchos? That's the point. He said that's why baluchot lo nemar l'dudam shenikvu aleim milmala, because they were like sort of fastened upon these tablets from above, from Hashem. Lekach darshu charus lashon cherus. Therefore, the drasha, they expounded upon that and said, you know what charut really means? It means cherut. It means freedom. Lomar, kishem shayu osios halalu b'nei chorin. That just as these letters weren't stuck. Think about the imagery. They weren't stuck. They weren't engraved in these tablets. They were their own entities. They were their own free spirits on some level, right? So just as they weren't stuck, so too, they weren't stuck in the luchos klal, veloni batlu bebitul ala luchos, and they weren't negated. They weren't negated, you know, in within the luchos themselves, right? They weren't kind of stuck within them, so to speak, right? They had their own life force, their own vitality. Therefore, velo nibatlu bebitul haluchos. So they never went away when the luchos themselves went away. When the luchos were broken, those letters were not going away. Sha'arei b'shviras haluchos. For when the tablets were broken, hayu ha'otiot porchot. The Medrash tells us the letters were flying up to heaven. You could understand this Medrash now. What do you mean when it says the letters were flying up to heaven? Because that's where they came from. They literally came from Hashem. They went on to this thing, these luchot, and they're kind of like there, fluttering there within it, but not within it, held in, but held out. And then all of a sudden, Moshe breaks the luchot. They go right back to Hashem. Right? So, because normally, if you have something written on these tablets and then you break them, well, if the tablets are broken, they're broken. But no, these were charut. These were free. They were free flowing. They were freestanding. Imkein vadai. Einan mishubadim el chomer ha'evan. Therefore, they're for sure, they're surely not subjugated to the material worth of this rock. Kach kol lom de Torah. So too, all those who learn Torah, yiyu gam kein b'nei chorin min amalchios. Therefore, everyone who learns Torah, me and you, everyone on this Zoom right now, anytime we learn together, we're free. We're free from malchios. We're free from the subjugation. We're free from tyranny. We're free from rules that hold us back and may make sense today and maybe don't make sense tomorrow and so on. The yisurin, and from suffering and from feeling sorry for ourselves, umalach hamaves, and even from the angel of death, Nebuch, which is around us, which we hear about stories and so on. When we're learning, we have it all. I said in shul on Shabbos that Rabbi Rubinstein, Zichron Lebracha, used to always say, when things were tough, when, going through a hard time, whatever, he would say, I'd speak to him on a Thursday night and say, Rabbi Jonathan, if I didn't have my learning, if I didn't have my preparation for my shiur, for my Friday morning shiur, I don't know where I'd be. I'd have nothing, right? Because it's cherus. The fact that I'm quoting Rabbi Rubinstein now, what are we, 12 years on, almost 13 years from his passing. You know, I still see him. I still feel him. You can. I see your faces. And that's the charus. That's charus min malach hamavos. V'kach nemar v'chatavti ala luchot et advarim asher ayu ala luchot rishonim. Therefore, it says, you will write on the luchos when Moshe is commanded to make a second set after he achieves forgiveness for the Jewish people. V'chatavti, God says, I'll write on the luchos the words that I wrote on the first ones. Notice it says, Kadvarim lo nemar. This is an amazing shot. And the Kliyoker is pointing out, it doesn't say, I'll write on the luchos, just like I wrote on the other ones, just like the words I wrote on the other ones. Doesn't say that. Ella et hadvarim. It says I'm going to write the same words that I wrote on the first ones. Why? Lo mar lecha sha'otan otiot sheparchu min luchos rishonim yikvu kan. To teach you that those first letters that flew away after you broke the first set for good reason, they're coming right back onto this second set. I'm not writing it again. We're just putting them back where they were originally. Unbelievable shot. Unbelievable. The achar shedavar zem moresha kolzman shaluchos kayamin. Yesh li Yisrael bris krusa shiyu chorin min amalchios. And after we see that this thing represents that as long as the tablets are kayamim, exist in existence, the Jewish people have a covenant that's forged so that we're always free from min amalchios. Ve'achshav shechatanu einan ru'uyim l'chol ha'yehudim halalu al kein shibram. U'kmo shekotev ani amarti Elohim atem shetiyu kayamim kibnei Elohim chavaltem ma'aseichem achen kadem temusim kelo tihiyu od chorin mimalach hamaves. He says that, you know, ultimately, right, once the luchos were taken, right, here we are. We don't have the luchos anymore, right? They were broken and now there's a new set, but they're gone. So that it kind of changes things a little bit when we don't have them with us anymore, right? Kishiyu chorim malchus ve'achshav shechatu einan ru'uyin l'chol ha'yehudim halalu alkein shibram. Oh, I apologize. I thought he was talking about the future. He's just saying that you know, you have this amazing kind of lifeline that you could have lived, but now that you sinned, you messed that whole thing up. Therefore, that, right, and that's why it makes sense that Moshe broke him, because Moshe said, "Hey, this just doesn't apply to you right now. You're worshiping idols, right? You're doing everything against what the Torah had said, you know, that you could be or that you should do. Therefore, you know, all bets are off. I don't know what's going to be, and you know, for sure, you don't deserve the Torah." Uma shelo shavar Moshe haluchos techef. How come Moshe, remember I said he was up on the mountain first when Hashem told Moshe what was going on? Why didn't Moshe break them right away? Why didn't he break them right there? Hashem gave him the luchos on the mountain. Why didn't he break them right away? Why did he wait until he came down the mountain to see them? Lefi shemasik b'yalkut, shemachma shayu osios porchos hayu avanim kivedim. V'naflu miyado shel Moshe. U'lefize nuchal omar sh'ayu osos parchios tachas ahark shoro egel v'az hirgash mokshi nistalke mehem ha'kedusha akin shibrim tachas ahark dafka. Because the Medrash says, the Yalkut says, that once he came down with the Luchot, and the people were so disconnected from Torah, they were connected to something else, to a foreign god, to a foreign culture, right? The egel that goes back to Egypt, they were like, regressing in a spiritual way. All of a sudden, he felt the letters. Remember, we talked about these letters. The letters started like leaving, emancipating themselves, for lack of a better term, from the luchot themselves. The letters started going. They started like floating away. They started floating away. And all of a sudden, the spiritual letters, which made the luchot, you know, very doable, from a weight perspective, all of a sudden the physical weight of the luchot started bearing down on Moshe. They started getting heavier and heavier in his hands. And Moshe realized, oh my gosh, the luchot are losing their kedusha. Why are they losing their kedusha, their holiness? Because they're dependent on the Jewish people's holiness. And the Jewish people weren't keeping their end of the deal. Therefore, you don't get this incredible, you know, gift of freedom, you know, from suffering and from subjugation and from the angel of death, right? Which the Torah provides, which gives us really just this incredible hold on eternity. You don't get that because you're not living that right now. V'yeshom shalakach shivrem lefisha yu kmo shtar chov al Yisrael shtar chov shenikra ein letoveh v'me letovam, etc., etc. And basically, you know, I think I would just end it here because the piece is just so powerful, just so beautiful to understand, right? That Hashem spoke and the words themselves had physical forms, attached themselves to the luchot, and then the words start falling away or running away, floating away, once the luchot lacked their meaning. And I think for us, I think we have to think about what the Torah means to us and how the Torah plays a role in our lives, whether it's Torah, whether it's tefillah, whether it's the things that the Torah teaches us and how it grounds us, how it roots us in something that truly is eternal. And if God forbid we forget that, the yoke of Torah and mitzvah, it gets heavier and heavier upon us. You know what we call that? We call that Jewish guilt. But I think it's exactly the point, right? Because we understand that on some level we feel it. And if we're not doing what we should be doing, and we're not, and I'm speaking to myself as well, honestly, and we feel like we're not learning the way we should, we're not growing the way we should, we're not engaging the way we should, we're not being there for others the way we should, it weighs on us. It weighs on us. And the only thing that can lighten that burden is to engage. Right, is to, on some level, burden ourselves and to engage or re-engage with that Torah, with that tefillah, with that chesed, with that community. And all of a sudden, we feel lighter once again. That's the beauty of the second luchos. All of us have a chance for a second luchos. Even if we totally shatter the first set, we always, Baruch Hashem, have a chance for a second. Just to get to a question. All right, that's my message. Let's hear from Fred Danzig and from Jeff Steinberg. Fred. But why did they keep the broken luchos all together if they were just pieces of stone? Yeah. Right. Good question. Yeah. The answer is twofold. Number one, it's to show there's a concept that even something, anything that had holiness, and for whatever reason it doesn't have that sense anymore, we still have to remember, right? We always have to remember, you know, what they were. The Gemara actually talks about a person who, like an elderly person or someone who had become sick and, you know, has issues of dementia or Alzheimer's, whatever. And, you know, they used to be incredible Torah scholars and now they're not anymore. And they're, you know, fragments of themselves, so to speak, right? You should remember, luchot b'shivrei luchot menachim ba'arum. Those who had and don't have anymore, and those who have now are both in the Aron together. So that's one idea. It's a nice drushic idea. The other idea, I think, is from a tshuva standpoint, that we always have to remember where we came from. We always have to remember what happens when we don't take what we have to do seriously, the obligation seriously. We don't see the privilege that we have to engage with the Torah. Look what happens. Right? That they get broken. And I think we always have to remember that. And we have to carry that brokenness with us always, because that makes us better, right? It humbles us, it grounds us, and it helps us keep our perspective. Yeah. Right. Interesting. Right. I love it. Amazing. Amazing. Beautiful. Beautiful ha'ara, Fred. Thank you. Jeff, what do you got? Correct. Okay. Good, good. No, so just to clarify, so you heard right. The only difference is that the second luchot were they were hewn by Moshe, meaning they were carved out of Moshe's quarry, but Hashem said, "I'm writing on it." So it's still at God's writing, so to speak. So what was God's writing? Says the Kli Yakar, it was the original words from the first one. Right? The first luchot were God's material and God's writing. The second were our material and God's writing. So it was more of a collaboration. That's a good question. It's a machlokas, actually. That's a discussion. It's a dispute. But I think according to Kli Yakar, it would have that because it was the godly letters that came back onto the second luchot. So according to it would have had that still that spiritual quality to it. All right, guys. Everyone have an amazing, amazing day, amazing night, and wonderful rest of the week. Happy birthday to Adam Leff. Mazel tov. Many more, Tzavik. Take care, Chevra.